You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, it's The Bigger Picture and it's Mira Sivasodhi. With me is Professor Dr. Ileh Gebesuber, and she's a professor of physics from Austria who's an expert in nanotechnology. Now, her approach to science is wide and holistic, bridging over to biology, the arts and the social sciences. Now, one area of her research is into that structural colours in the focus of nanoengineering and the arts, which may sound confusing, but Professor Ileh is here to help me understand the physical basics of structural colours and to introduce examples from biology and man-made structural colours and to give an outlook on possible future applications in science and arts. How are you today?
I'm very, very fine. It's a pleasure to be here.
Mm-hmm. You know, Professor, you work at University Kebangsaan, Malaysia.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
How did you sort of decide to come to Malaysia?
In the end of 2008, my husband and myself decided it's time for a change. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to go to a country which is completely different to our country of origin. We come from Austria in Europe, where you have four seasons, you know, which is very far up north. And we wanted to go to a tropical country, to a country where we still have a lot of rainforests. I'm doing a lot of rainforest expeditions with my students. And to a country where you have many ethnicities and many religions living together. Mm-hmm. And of course, Malaysia is the country of choice.
Right. How long have you been here?
We have been here since the beginning of 2009. Mm-hmm. And we enjoy it more and more every day we are here.
Right. It's been 3 years. What got you involved in nanoengineering? I mean, is that what you teach at UKM?
Yes. So I have a lot of students doing nanotechnology, nanosciences. And I started with nanotechnology pretty early when I was doing my postdoc in the University of California at Santa Barbara, where we had the sharpest microscopes in the world. Mm-hmm. So microscopes with which you can watch tiny, tiny little structures, but not just watch them, but manipulate them, you know, move them around, build things with them. So this was very, very exciting. And at that time, also for the first time for me, you know, as a physics engineer, I came across biological nanotechnological wonders. We were looking at little organisms which are so small that actually you cannot see them with your blank eye. Mm-hmm. But they are beautiful, they are amazing, and if you blow them up, if you print them out, they look like pieces of art.
Right. Just before we go into the relationship between biology and nanoengineering or nanotechnology, how would you describe to the layperson what nanotechnology really is?
Well, nanotechnology is technology where the functional units are very, very small. Mm-hmm. So if you look at one of your hairs, it's about 100,000 nanometers in width.
Okay. And so it's a length, measurement in terms of length.
Yes, so a nanometer, the diameter of a hair is 100,000 nanometers. Mm-hmm. And the functional units in nanotechnology are on a length scale of 10 nanometers, 100 nanometers, something like this. So they are very, very small. And actually, you know, nanotechnology is not something that has been invented by people. It has been around, you know, since the beginning of life. Mm-hmm. If you look at organisms, actually, they are all nanotechnological wonders.
Right. And why do you say that? I mean, I'm just thinking, if it's just a way of measuring, what's so wonderful about that? What are some of the applications?
Well, the thing is, if you look at matter on the nanoscale, everything is completely different than to the macro scale, to our normal scale. The physics, of course, doesn't change, but the things that are important, surfaces, change compared to the macro scale, and you have a completely different behavior of materials on the nanoscale. Mm-hmm. For us in technology, it's a very exciting and new world. Whereas, you know, biology, it's the language of biology at this scale. So if we look at biological entities, with our high-resolution microscopes, we can learn a lot for new nanotechnological applications.
Could you give me an example?
Well, one example might be how photosynthesis takes place.
Okay, fair enough.
You know, the conversion of the energy coming from the sun, light, into something that can be, you know, utilized by the organism into some form of eatable energy. For plants, it would be starch. For us, you know, in the solar cells, for example, it's energy that we can use to heat, to cool, to light up our places, to listen to the radio.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I'm thinking, my mind is going back to the measurement.
Yeah.
Now, you know it, you know the structures of, for an example, sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
Can you measure that in terms of nanotechnology?
Yes, you can, for example, build transistors which work with single electrons. You can split photons. You can go down to the very building blocks of physics with nanotechnological mm-hmm. applications.
And now you have sort of combined, or rather you're going to tell me more about how you link nanoengineering with colors as well as sustainability for all of us. What is the connection? How did you manage to connect nanoengineering with colors?
Well, there are two ways to do things. In our human, in our technological application at the moment, we mainly have a material-based approach. So we use for different applications in engineering, in science, in technology, in the arts, we use different materials. And many of these materials we need to mine in very remote places. We need to process them. We need to deliver them here. We need to bring them together. And then we have, you know, structures. We have materials which are doing what they are supposed to do. Whereas when you look at natural organisms, they are not so much using the materials themselves, but they are very, very exquisitely structuring the materials. And so concerning colors, to come to your question, concerning colors, there are two possible ways to make coloration. One is with pigments.
Mm-hmm.
So you use dyes.
Yep.
You have the material and then you put some dye on the material so that it gets color. In some cases, for example, in paint, for houses, for cars, in dyes for the hair, in dyes for the clothes, this can be very toxic. The second way to produce colors is like it is done in the rainbow, like it is done in the CD or DVD or the colors of the soap bubbles and also the colors of some Malaysian butterflies.
Mm-hmm.
They do not contain a single pigment. All the coloration comes into existence by physical processes, by scattering, by interference, by basic physical processes which go on, you know, like when you look at the rainbow. The water droplets, which are the origin for the colors of the rainbow, you know, they scatter the light, they diffract the light. You have interference phenomena generating the color. Because in white light, you actually have all the wavelength, all the colors. You just have to split them up that you can see the colors. And what the structural colors in biology are doing, in some tropical butterflies, in some glass-making algae, in some viruses who are arranging exquisitely ordered, is that they're doing exactly this. They're playing with the light to generate the colors. So no toxicity is involved. You don't have any waste. You're just structuring the material you want to put coloration on. And with these structures, you get the colors you need.
Mm-hmm.
And so now it's straightforward. If you're using sustainable materials, you, of course, also have a sustainable, you know, color.
Sure. So and gained from natural sources is what you're talking about.
Well, yes, yes. You can use the material you want to use. You can use a, you know, biomaterial, which is around. But you can also use a tailor-made material, which you are producing, and then which would have the functionality which you would need.
Doesn't this sort of have the same relationship with the way we are colored? You know, when you have sunlight and then, you know, you become tanned, that yeah. sort of thing, where the sunlight is actually converting something's going on in our pigments that yeah. we become darker.
Yes, but you just mentioned the word pigments. Mm-hmm. So it's all pigmentation. It's all chemical coloration.
But isn't this pigment natural pigment in us?
Yes, it's natural. I didn't say that the pigment colors are not natural. Most of the colors in nature are pigment colors. Okay. Structural colors are actually relatively rare. It's just one example that nature is using structures instead of material right. to achieve the certain functionality.
Okay. Can you tell me about the peacock? I mean, it's got beautiful colors on it. I mean, how did that actually come about?
Well, the amazing thing about the peacock is that actually it's an organic crystal. The feathers. You know, if you have a look at opal, at the gemstone opal, you can see that it changes its coloration with the viewing angle. It plays through the rainbow. And the same happens if you look at a peacock feather. So you can see that the colors are very, very brilliant. And they also change with the viewing angle. You can play through, you know. And when you look at the peacock feather with the optical microscope, it looks beautiful, but not too interesting. But mm-hmm. if you take a real, real high power microscope, which brings you down to the nanometer scale, you know, to this very, very small length scale, you can actually see that the peacock feather has very, very ordered structures, which via playing with the light generate the colors. And these structures, the change just a couple of nanometers in size depending on if you look at the brown part of the feather or the blue part or the yellow
right.
part.
So you're talking about that two-tone effect that we sometimes see in materials as well. Mm-hmm. You know, you at certain angles you see the greens in a different tone, for an example. But that, as you mentioned earlier, has been derived from pigments, which are chemicals, would you say?
So iridescence, the change of color with the viewing angle, is a phenomenon that is typical for structural colors. In structural colors, the dimensions of the structures are directly responsible for the coloration. Mm-hmm. So if you have a soap bubble and the soap bubble changes its thickness, the color changes.
That's right.
So the diameter, the size of the structures is directly connected to the color which you can see. So now you can imagine if you look at a thin oil film or mortar perpendicular, it might have a certain thickness, but if you look at a certain angle, it's thicker because you don't look at the oil film straight, but you look at an angle. So the distance the light travels in the oil is longer, so the color changes towards the red. So this is how you get the change of the colors with the viewing angle. And now in some structures, like a DVD or like a CD, you can play yourself through the whole rainbow when you look at them. But in some structures, like in Roger Brooks' birdwing, you know, the typical, the national butterfly of Malaysia, mm-hmm. you can see these nice green colors on its wings, which actually stay green for most angles and light intensities. And just if you have very, very bright light, or if you have very, very small grazing angles at which you look at the wing, you would see that it's also red and blue and all the other colors of the rainbow, but over most viewing angles it would be green. So some animals can control this iridescence and can bring it down to just one color or two.
I never ever thought I'd have this discussion with anyone on this show, but it's amazing. It's mind-boggling. I am speaking to Professor Dr. Ileh Gebersuber. She's a professor of physics from Austria, actually seconded here in Malaysia at University Kebangsaan Malaysia. And we are discussing the structural colors and the focus of nanoengineering and arts, a survey of state-of-the-art developments. And she sort of linked all of this to sustainability. When we come back, we'll find out about, you know, when exactly this became a phenomenon on the bigger picture. BFM 89.9.
You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. It's The Bigger Picture and it's Mira Sivasodhi. Whoever thought we'd be able to link engineering, colours and sustainability? Well, we are actually having this discussion with Professor Dr. Ile Gebesuber. She is a Professor of Physics from Austria, a Professor of Physics in Institute of Microengineering and Nanoelectronics in University Kebangsaan, Malaysia. And we're discussing structural colours in the focus of nanoengineering and the arts. You know, Professor, earlier you mentioned that this has been around for a long, long time. When did, you know, people actually realize this nanotechnology and the ability to identify, apply this technology to colors?
Well, actually, you know, it was already the old Romans who found out about this. Mm-hmm. If you look at Roman glass, they used nano-sized gold particles to have the beautiful red coloration in their glass. And if you go to the Victoria and Albert Museum in London, you can actually see the so-called Lycurgus cup, which is a beautiful glass cup which changes color between red and green depending on if the light comes from below, from behind the cup, or if it's reflected off the cup. So you have nanotechnology in ancient things which people were building, but you know, the understanding and the science behind it just came up when we had the machinery to investigate material on this small scale and to understand what's going on in materials on this small scale.
Mm-hmm. So you sort of stumbled upon it when you were in America, when you came up, stumbled upon these microscopes that got you interested in it?
Yes, exactly. So I was completely stunned. You know, if you put a little layer of this glass-making algae of the diatoms on a glass slide, they would look so beautiful. You would have this iridescent effect, you know, with very brilliant, very shining, very just amazing colors. And when I went on one of my first rainforest expeditions here in Malaysia, I suddenly saw this fern. It's called the peacock fern, Selaginella. And actually, it is blue. It looks like it has an inbuilt light source. So I went to this fern and I touched it and I moved the leaf, and it changed from blue to green and back to blue and to green. And I was just so amazed that you can find this nanotechnology directly on your rainforest expeditions.
Right.
So what we are doing right now is, you know, I have plenty of students who come from Malaysia, who come from Europe, and we are all going together on rainforest expeditions, the engineers, the physicists, the artists, the architects, and we are always keeping our eyes open to find new nanotechnological wonders.
And earlier you also mentioned about how, you know, it is so beautiful under the microscope and it almost looks like a piece of art. How do you capture that and, you know, produce it as an art piece?
There are two possible approaches to this. One is if you look at the nanotechnology itself, which you can just see with high-power microscopes. But if you, for example, look at the wings of some butterflies, which look like little, you know, sculptures, which are so accurate, so nice and so beautiful. So you could blow up these structures and bring them into the visible range. So one of these tiny little diatoms, for example, where 20 next to each other would give the width of one of your hairs. If you blow them up to the size of a chair, you could make this beauty accessible to our eyes without the use of microscopes. Mm-hmm. So that's one way to do it.
But how do you capture it?
You can determine the three-dimensional structure and then you can print it with a 3D printer in large scale. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, like a friend of mine who is an art student, she bought soap. Mm-hmm. She bought a cube of soap, 10 times 10 times 10 centimeters, cubic centimeters large, and she took one of her little carving knives and she carved out in 3 days of work one of these diatoms. And the soap plays from yellow to orange to deep red. And actually, with this carved glass-making algae, we won an art competition in Austria.
Wow.
Because we brought, you know, this tiny little organism, which is not accessible to the human eye, into a range where we can appreciate its beauty. So this would be one possibility, to blow up these tiny structures to big structures which we can see and which we can admire. Mm-hmm. The second possibility is to transfer the way of doing these colors to the arts. And you know, as I said earlier, we can build these structures of sustainable materials, but we can make much, much more with them, because their color depends on the size of the structures. So if you make the structures change their size with certain signals from the outside, for example, with humidity, you can change the colors. So you have a piece of art which has a certain color, and then the humidity changes and it would change its color, and then it would go back to the original color. Mm-hmm. You can make structures out of materials, structural colors, which would be completely invisible to the eye. For example, you have a painting which has no coloration at all. And then somebody comes and says, "Now I want to see you painting." And because of the energy of talking, the structures get bigger and you can see what is painted there. You can make detectors, you know. For example, when somebody, you have an invisible painting, and when somebody goes by who has a perfume which contains oud oil, then, you know, it starts to blink in a certain color.
Wow.
You can combine, you know, when a man and a woman are standing in front of the picture, it looks different. You can make a curtain in the opera which would change coloration with the music. And there is, you know, the limit is your fantasy. Mm-hmm. And actually, we are now coming also very close to medical applications, because the structural coloration can, of course, also be used for medical applications. You know, if you put a droplet of blood on an array with these colors, which would be invisible in the beginning, but when some, you know, disease markers which you have in your body would attach to these structures, they would change their structures and they would come into the visibility range. So you can make them for lab on a chip devices to detect diseases. And so it's not just in the arts where we can apply them, but actually we can, and they are applied in many different applications.
Is there a difference in these applications when you have done your research here in Malaysia and in Austria? Because I can imagine the humidity here is really high. In Austria, it wouldn't be as high.
Yes, exactly. So you, of course, have to tune your pieces of art to the environment. And one inspiring organism is the Hercules beetle, which lives in the rainforest. And actually, it's green, unless it's raining. When it's raining, it turns black because of the humidity. And so the colors would still be there, so to speak, in a physical sense, but not visible for the human eye, because it would just be visible for animals who have a different range of viewing than the pupil. You know, for example, bees can see in the ultraviolet where humans cannot see. And I like to mention this because some flowers have amazingly beautiful structural coloration, but they are not visible to us people. They're just visible to the bees.
Right.
So researchers just found out about them a couple of years ago, because, of course, the flowers signal for the bees and not for the people.
Right. And all of this because of the availability of high-powered microscope and the link with nanotechnology.
Yeah.
Amazing, amazing work indeed. Would you like to share anything else? What have been your research or findings here in Malaysia? Is it ongoing? How long are you going to be here for, you know?
Well, you know, we love to be in Malaysia, so we will see how long we will stay here.
Yeah, what are you working on right now?
Well, at the moment, we have various projects running. One of them is called the development of a new generation of MEMS in medicine to assist, enhance, and expand the human sensory perceptions. So we are investigating senses in people. You know, we can see, we can feel touch, we can smell, we can hear, and the senses of animals. And in many cases, the animals are sensing different bandwidth. So, for example, as I mentioned, the bees can sense the ultraviolet, which people cannot sense. And the elephants can sense infrasound and can communicate via very, very low tones, which we people would not hear. And there are even animals who sense signals which we do not sense with our human senses, like the magnetic field. You know, the migratory birds, which are flying from Russia over Malaysia down to Australia, they are navigating using the magnetic field lines of the Earth. Dolphins are doing echolocation. And what we are doing with these senses, with increased bandwidth and with completely different signals they are sensing than the signals than the people are sensing, is we are bringing them into the range so that people can use them. I give you one example. One example would be that when you are a blind person and you are approaching a curbstone edge, that your walking stick would start to vibrate, because via echolocation it would determine when is the curbstone edge coming, and it would give you a signal.
That could be a possible application.
That could be a possible application. Or the second application my two Malay PhD students are currently working on is to bring the sense of bees who can navigate using the polarization of the skylight, who can find their beehive by looking at the sky, to bring this sense to people, for example, people with dementia or children who are lost, so that they can find their way home. We would attach MEMS, microelectromechanical devices, to the human body, and it would signal via signals which are perceivable to us, for example, you know, touch, in which direction to go.
And all of this is natural.
Yes.
Yeah, all natural, nothing, you know, radioactive, no such thing.
No.
Amazing. Hence the reason, you know, Ile has actually linked nanoengineering to sustainability, which is really, really quite impressive. What is your final message to all of us on this link, Ile? What would you like to leave us with to think about when it comes to nanoengineering and sustainability?
Well, what I would like to mention is that, you know, if we look at the natural world, we are amazed that we see this combination of beauty and of functionality and sustainability. So we have all three together. And I think to approach a new type of engineering, we should sit down and think how we can, you know, transfer this to our applications, to have this combination of structure and function and sustainability in our approaches in science, engineering, and the arts.
Brilliant work, Professor.
Thank you.
Professor Dr. Ile Gebesuba, Professor of Physics, Institute of Microengineering and Nanoelectronics, University Kebangsaan, Malaysia, on structural colors in the focus of nanoengineering and the arts on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, The Business Station.